This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious and oh so wonderful friends. You are looking fantastic today. Hi, my name is Chadley, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, astronauts, engineers, aquanauts, artists, and other experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, cooperation, creativity, and critical thinking. Right now, please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the Admiral of Adventure, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed. How's it going today?
It is going awesome, awesome, awesome. Although I have to tell you, after the last episode, I had this nightmare about being chased by a big giant column of army ants, but I got away and I was safe.
Well, that's great. Well, you'll really enjoy the episode today because it's about math.
Oh, I'm going to enjoy it. I don't think
you
so.
You will. Oh. It's really cool. Just spin the wheel. It's
here
a fun show.
Here we go.
How does 2 plus 2 equal cleaner sky?
All right. Now, I'm already annoyed. How does 2 plus 2 equal cleaner skies? This sounds like advanced geometric algebra or something.
No, it's really easy engineering.
Okay.
Yes. So we have an environmental scientist, Janice Lau, here to talk to us today about how we can make our skies cleaner, which is, hey, everybody wants that, right?
Absolutely. Cleaner skies, that's right up my alley.
So welcome to the show, Janice.
Thank you so much, Ben and Jennifer, for having me. I am so honored and definitely will talk about how 2 plus 2 adds a cleaner sky. Very excited.
So to make our listeners clear, and for Jed and I also, this is math. We're talking about math on the show. I think this is the first time we've talked about math, isn't it, Jed?
The first time we've talked specifically about math.
There's been a lot of math stuff.
When they're talking about the nuclear and the x-rays coming out of the black holes and stuff, that was kind of, and the lady with the organic chemistry, that was just amazing.
Oh, well, okay, yes. But this is actual math. So, Janice, start out by, let's tell our listeners, what is an environmental scientist? What do you do?
Yeah, what an environmental scientist does is basically we study the environment. And what I did when I was in college is learn all the different sciences. I had to do chemistry courses, physics, biology, and math.
Lots of math. What kinds of math? I'm just curious.
Calculus. I started with algebra, math, some trigonometry, but a lot and lots of calculus. If I had known initially that there would be so much math, I may have hesitated a bit, but I've become stronger because of it. And I think I'm cooler because of it, actually. You know, when people say, like, I'm not good at math, let Janice do it, I'm just like, okay, give it to me. That's a bit of my swag. Yeah, that is my cool factor, I would say. Yeah, so there's a lot of math involved in environmental science because we're trying to make sense of nature, and we do it through mathematical formulas.
Okay, that's cool, isn't it?
It is cool, but I never thought of Mother Nature. When I envisioned Mother Nature, I thought of like flowers growing and her planting and taking care of little birdies and stuff like that. I didn't know like Mother Nature was like doing calculus and stuff.
Yeah, so what part of math, how does math help you figure out environmental science? I'm curious.
Nature is all about patterns, and math is all about patterns. And I don't think we teach math that way, right?
Like, no.
We don't teach it that way. Pattern. You know, when we do 2, 4, 6, 8, that's a pattern. Add two, you know, and even with threes, where you do 3, 6, 9, that's a pattern. And that's the simplest way I would explain. So when we look out and let's say I go out as an environmental scientist, I used to do this before. Now I don't do this as much. But when I was a younger scientist, we would actually go out to the field and take a measuring stick and measure and create a square and measure that square and say, okay, in this smaller square, how many ants are there?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we say, okay, there's so many ants in this one square. Let's just five. Five right. little ants in that one square meter, for example, right. or square foot, yeah? And then we say, okay, so if there are five ants in this square foot, how many are there in if this was 20 square foot?
So it's like the story problems we had as kids, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's how it is.
No, but you have to take in other factors to that too, right? So I'm assuming that would be the squares would all have to be the same type of like grass or desert or whatever. You can't compare grass and, you know, two different
yeah.
environments.
And so that's why there's a lot of drawing, by the way. If kids want, and there's a lot, if those who want to draw, there's a lot of drawing. There's literally, and it can be stick figures because I'm not a good artist. Mine will be like little hairs and say, this is grassy. And then there'd be like little stones in the other square and this is stony. And then we would have to categorize. Remember when we were kids in kindergarten and we had to categorize shapes?
Mm-hmm.
Which one were yes. triangles? Which one were squares? That's what we do as well. We say these are the grassy areas and these are the stony areas and this is, you know, this clay soil. And then we come up with a pattern and we say, well, in the clay soil, there's lesser ants based on the data we got. And then in the stony soil, there's more ants, something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come up with sort of a, you know, hypothesis. I don't know if that's a huge word, but we come
yes.
up with almost like, we sort of speculate and we say, look, why are there lesser ants in the clay soil than their stony soil? And we start asking these questions. And then that's how patterns emerge. We have discussions with other co-scientists. I'm not the only one who goes out there. So we then collate that information. It's like little, you know, if you do like, especially now with the pandemic, a lot of people are going crazy with puzzles. Like they're going nuts with puzzles.
Yes.
It's like me as one scientist, I'm only looking at one part of that puzzle. And another scientist looks at another part of the puzzle. We come together to bring the different pieces of the puzzle together to describe what nature is in that area.
Hmm.
So that's what we use math. The reason we use a lot of math, and a lot of people are really surprised.
Yeah.
Really? Like, a lot of people say, like, I want to be an environmental scientist because I want to be outdoors. And I said, yeah, but there's a lot of math involved with outdoors. because math is a way of expressing. It's it's like a language, right? It's an expression. So how do we're trying to understand how nature works, and we do it through math.
I get going out and finding a piece of land and measuring it. Okay, so this square, we're going to find out how many things are in this square and compare it to that square. But the land is solid. It's right there. We're talking about how can 2 plus 2 equal cleaner skies? And the skies, first off, it's up there. You got to, you know, so it's hard to reach. But also, it's moving. And so you can't just say, well, this square meter of air because it's moving and there are winds. And so I'm confused.
Yeah, so the way we do it is, and I'm going to ask a lot of the kids to think about it to go with me here, right? Like, it's not, imagine the air as liquid that's in a container, right? And imagine that's just how much air we have. We're trying to figure out if that air is clean.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to figure out what is the composition of that air. Is there enough of, are there too many pollutants? Is it at a level where it can really kill us? At what level is that? And then if it is, how can we reduce that those bad things that's in the air? So if you, yeah, that's sort of
yeah,
how we imagine it.
Yeah,
you're like an artist, right? You're trying to imagine, okay, I have this thing which I can't hold. It's not tangible. I'm
mm-hmm.
trying to hold air. I can't. Unlike soil, which I can, right? So we
yes.
are imagining. And this is why we have to use calculus.
Ah.
Calculus helps us imagine things that are a bit intangible. And the thing is, a lot of people are really intimidated by calculus, but it's really a combination of just very long addition or subtraction formulas strung together. That's kind of how calculus is like.
Well, that's easy to understand. So the question, though, is, so if you're going to clean up the skies, are you just talking about cleaning the skies, or are you talking about, like, are we talking about airplanes here being cleaner or cars being cleaner or something like that?
So my work, what I've done, my experiences anyway, is the question that I was given, the word problem that I was given when I was in my 30s, I'm no longer in my 30s, was essentially, a long time ago, was this, the word problem that was given to me was, how do we stop putting in bad air into the atmosphere?
That so was, like exhaust from plane. Cars or from
yeah,
planes
but this was from
something?
A plane because I was working for an airline, okay. Right? So they were asking like, how do we want to do the right thing, Janice. So how can our plane stop producing this bad stuff that goes into the air? And so what I had to do was come back and say, well, how is it being produced? Where is it coming from?
Ah.
And then says engine. Okay, it's like you're trying to work backwards, right? You're trying to say, okay, it starts from the engine. That's how the bad air comes out of, right? Engine. Okay, then how does the engine work? Like, what actually it gets spewed out? Then you find out it's a fuel. Fuel is the thing that... But fuel is liquid, then it turns into, not semi-liquid, I would say, when it leaves the engine. But then you're thinking, okay, what's in the fuel? There are two things. I had to try to understand. Math is all about relationships. And the reason why 2+2 equals cleaner air is I was trying to figure out, one, what is that thing that's being spewed out of the engine? It's fuel. So one of the elements of the formula is fuel, right? Let's use F.
Right.
The fuel. Okay. But then why are we using a lot or less fuel? Because the amount of fuel matters in terms of how much bad air you put into the air.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Then if you're in an airplane, and I think a lot of us have already taken planes to on holiday, you find out that the heavier the plane, the more fuel it has to burn.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
The more stuff you bring to your holiday, the more, so things like that. Well, what contributes to that weight?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It's things like the TV monitors in our chairs. You know, when you're on a long haul flight and there's a TV monitor, that actually adds to more weight. Or if you're like when airlines say, please pack lightly, there's a reason they're asking you to do that.
but those things are all part of the plane and nothing that we can really control. So how do you, like, do you make the engine more efficient? Is that how you worked on it?
So you have to do everything from the wings. What is the wings made of? Are they made of a certain metal? So then do we have to weigh it? Is there another type of metal that is lighter? And so there is such a metal. I don't know if it's actually called a metal, but they call it a carbon composite. But basically it's a combination of different types of metals that makes wings lighter. So that's one. A lot of new planes are now using that sort of metal because it's lighter. Things like, you know, in the galley, there's like this, like a tray that the flight attendants
like
use.
Yes.
The cart, yep.
The cart, and that is extremely heavy. I'm not sure if you know this. Flight attendants often get injured through that, those carts.
Wow.
Yeah, I get hit by one once.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So do you make that lighter? That alloy, do you make that lighter? So it's everything from the TV screens. We make it lighter. So then you go and ask Sony and Panasonic. They're usually the guys who make the TV screens.
Right.
You go back and ask them, can you make this a little lighter? By how much? And so it's almost like, imagine like I'm trying to reduce the weight of every single item that's on the plane.
Now, do you have a target weight that you're trying to get?
Yes. And so that's a math formula as well. You're trying to come up with a sweet spot. You're trying to figure out, okay, what is that? At what point of weight do I start actually seeing us emitting less bad air into the atmosphere?
Oh.
And so I need to get to that target. So then you say, okay, so how do I and here's where the fractions come in. You divide the weight, the target weight, and you say, well, I'm going to try to get maybe a pound from the cart. I'm going to try to get it maybe a pound from the blanket. Even the blankets have to be lighter.
Wow. So,
yeah. And then there's another thing we call a fixed variable or a fixed number. And that is the assumption we always make is that we can't change or influence our customers. You know, we can't say, please, we can just encourage them to bring lighter luggage. But we've made an assumption that that's not going to be the case. And so that is what we call a fixed number. We don't think that's going to move. We have no control over that. So we're just going to make an assumption that the number is this.
You couldn't come up with diet airlines and everybody who flies has to be on a diet for a month beforehand?
There was a lot of discussion about, hey, maybe we should ask people to go to the toilet before they... I mean, things like that. Every weight you put in, the aircraft matters.
Well, that, and this is the thing that is really fascinating is that it's just a great example that every little thing matters and that there's a lot that's going on when we're in an airplane. There's a lot of things that we can do that you can do in an airplane, but there's a lot of things that we can do, even things that we think aren't that big a deal, that we can do things in our family that are going to help make the planet cleaner.
Yeah. And so things like, do we take off the magazines? They're heavy.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because when you first were talking about this 2 + 2 = cleaner skies, your environmental scientist, I'm thinking, oh, well, clearly we're going to make the engines more efficient. So I guess I'm very surprised to instead think about, I never thought about the weight of the airplane and how every single little thing, could make it heavier. So this is why we get, those of you that overpack, this is why you have to pay the extra price, right? Because they're trying to not get you bring the heavy luggage on.
There's sort of a penalty, right? That's the thing. I mean, even things like, you don't see it. It's in the cargo hold at the bottom, at the belly of the plane. Even something like the door of the cargo, there's like little cargo boxes. So, you know, let's say you want to send a package to your grandma.
Right.
And like maybe FedEx or UPS are going to send it. They're going to use their planes to do that. They're put into these boxes. And again, they categorize it. This goes to Boston. This goes to Maryland. You know, that sort of boxes. So they know immediately when they take it out, it's organized. They know where these things have to go, right? Those boxes used to be made of aluminium or steel, which were very heavy, right? Because the whole thing has to protect the packages. That's the reason why.
So they don't move around or get bumped or something. So.
So a lot of the engineers thought, well, the covers don't need to be aluminium or steel. So a lot of airlines now, if you notice, go and look out when you see the plane preparing and then you've boarded and you can actually see from your window, if you're sitting in the window seat, you can see cargo haulers taking out the cargo.
Mm-hmm.
You will see that a lot of airlines now, even the mainstream airlines, United, America, and Delta, the cover of those cargo boxes are now made of cloth.
Mm. Oh.
Because they're lighter.
Wow. This is amazing. I love this, and it's making me think of completely different ways about travel. We could probably also get better gas mileage, I assume, if we don't load up our cars.
The same principle applies. So imagine fuel as a horse. Back in the 18th and 19th century, before we had cars, the more you loaded onto your horse carriage, the harder your horse is going to work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the STEM principle here.
Wow.
Well, and it's math, too. I mean, it's not just science that you think of, but it's all of this math that you have to use to then figure out the science. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of engineering kind of, too, like re-engineering material science engineering, changing the materials that you're using.
Yeah,
I mean, this seems like you're doing almost every aspect you can think of STEAM.
And that's why, as I said, this is why initially I was, when in college, I was like, why do I have to study all the sciences? And then I don't get it. Like, huh? I just wanted, like, at that time, I just wanted to do environmental chemistry. I was just like, that was the only thing I wanted to do. But now working in this field, I'm like, oh, I get it. Because I talked to you about carbon composites, right? Mm-hmm. There's a chemical structure to that. You have to create a material that's strong enough, that is not going to melt, that is not going to freeze. I mean, like, all of these things, plus it's light. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? It's all these constraints that you have to figure out and work. It's really a workaround. Science is all about trying to figure out, like, here are all the constraints. I'm given all of these constraints. And it's funny when people say think out of the box. No, I have to think inside the box.
Mm-hmm. Inside the box with the cloth cover.
There you go. Or in the plane or in the car or whatever. Yes.
Yeah. Hey. So, yeah, that's what I essentially do for a living. I always have word problems I have to solve, and usually it involves math formulas.
That's
so
awesome.
So, see, math works. You will use your math.
You will use your math. You will have to learn your fraction. There is a reason why we have to learn least common denominator and greatest common factor. We will use it later in life.
Yeah. Hey, Janice, one of the things that we love to do here on Solve It is we love to make the show interactive and to give our listeners a challenge. Is there something that you can challenge our listeners with today?
Yeah, I have a little homework, and this is going to be fun for our kids. I want them to create their own math formula by observing their families.
Ooh.
Okay.
Especially COVID now, we're all stuck, and we're all seeing each other for 24/7. I'm guessing there's some arguments happening at home. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage these kids to come up with their own formula. Like my son, he'll call it the Isaac formula. And the Isaac formula could mean that every time at 4 o'clock, daddy goes to sleep or whatever, and he'll come up with a formula. And it's really trying to encourage kids to see behaviors and relationships and see connections. Because math formulas are all about bringing connections together. And they could come up with a formula of, you know, when does, you know, something like, how often do we argue at the dining table? Or, at what chocolate bar would I start feeling sleepier? You know, something like this.
Mm. So for me, it would be, how often do we end up ordering out because I don't feel like cooking?
Yeah. And there's usually a relationship to that. Find a pattern. It's a behavioral pattern.
Yeah. And for us, we would have to figure out how many times my dog, Augie, has a nap during the day.
There you go.
Yeah. And what time?
There you go. What time? Yeah.
This has been amazing. Jennifer, what a great guest. Janice, thank you so much for helping us figure out how does 2 + 2 equal cleaner skies.
Yeah, and I love the math part. So all the kids, now you can go out and learn your math and be excited about it. Yes. So thank you for being on the show with us, Janice. It was awesome.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me talk about math. It is cool, guys. Kids, you're going to love it.
Wow, Jennifer, that was a really, really fascinating episode of the show.
I know. I mean, I had no idea when she was talking about cleaner skies that it meant the things that go inside the plane to weigh it down. That's basic math.
I know. And can you believe that they actually thought about making all the passengers go to the bathroom before they got on the plane?
Yeah, that's probably a little extreme math. But if you kids thought this episode was cool, then you need to do the challenge, which is to go and observe your family and create a formula about them. So math in action. And if you do that, draw a picture or send it to us through our website, solveitforkids.com, or tag us at @kidsolve at Twitter and Instagram, because I would love to see some math problems come our way.
I would like to get some help solving those math problems.
Exactly. It's going to be tons of fun, and you will learn that math is also fun.
Well, I know what I have a formula. And we're going to say today plus 7 days equals the next exciting episode of Solve It for Kids.